You're listening to Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, and with me today are Dave Taylor, Shauna Foster, and Tim Brogdon. They're all locals, and they all have a connection with the Sacred Stone Camp or with the Standing Rock protests. Shauna Foster is the minister of the Two Rivers Unitarian Universalist Congregation. Dave Taylor owns Cool Brick Studios, and Tim is taking teepee poles to the Sacred Stone Camp today. We're recording this on Tuesday, on Election Day. First of all, thanks so much for taking the time this morning to come in and chat about this. I'd like for you guys to share your experiences out in North Dakota associated with the Dakota Access Pipeline protests, even if you haven't been there yet. Tim, we'll start with you.
Well, thanks, Amy, and thanks for doing this. It is a blessed thing to get more communication and word out. I woke up a week ago Monday thinking about the election and the dynamics of what this country has found itself in, and I was very frustrated, extremely frustrated, and really felt like I needed some way to get some positivity back, at least for myself. And I knew about Standing Rock, and I suspect that I saw something on the news or, I don't know, something sparked in me, and I said, that's what I'm doing. Those people need, they're fighting against everything that I'm angry about. They're standing up to an institutional catastrophe that I firmly believe in. And in light of all of the other confusion, divisiveness, anxiety that's happening in this country, they're really the only ones out there standing in the face of it saying, no, we've had enough. That's enough. And so I posted one post on the Roaring Fork Swap thinking that I would fill my van and do what I could to at least feel like I wasn't just sitting at my desk looking at memes on Facebook. And that the response was overwhelming. Carbondale, Basalt, all the way to Aspen, all the way to Rifle, the response was overwhelming. And we've ended up, I say we, because it'd be... because it has become we.
Tell me what you're feeling right now. What's coming up for you?
Pretty massive gratitude and blessings to have my cynicism greatly alleviated, a great deal of healing, an upwelling of hope that change can happen, an upwelling of beliefs that normal people can stand in the face of really monstrous corruption and matter and be heard. And again, just gratitude to all the people who've shown up. It's impossible for me to name them, and it's been 1 week. There's so many, and I'm really grateful.
So talk about how the supplies, you know, what you're taking and how that's getting out to North Dakota.
Well, I knew that Dave Taylor already had connections up there. I knew that he was already highly involved and had personal connections in the tribes. So I decided to call Dave that morning and get his feedback. And he immediately said, well, we need to get together and talk. And I'm going to bring this other fellow, Dave Alvaros, Dave Starbear Alvaros. And we met at the Smithy and sat down and brainstormed. And really, the energy was instantaneous. And between Dave Alvaros and I, we've now sent two panel vans with trailers loaded. We had another cargo that was fully loaded. We have a truck and trailer going today, fully loaded with those teepees and canvases. And then my Dodge Grand Caravan is out there, that was going to be the original vehicle. I don't even know if we can get any personal supplies in it. We're going to actually have to leave some stuff here just to be able to make the trip. Mm-hmm. It's a blessing. It's a massive blessing. What we're taking is rugged winter gear. This is about half and half. There's a ratio of about half and half food to this other gear. Rugged winter gear, a lot of heavy snow jackets. There's a lot of coveralls. People responded with wool gloves, wool socks, wool beanies. Some tools. Shauna brought a bunch of emergency blankets to the table, a lot of emergency blankets. And people were really, really helpful in thinking ahead and brought a lot of items like that as well. One of the many things they need up there is to be able to sleep well at night so they can do their thing during the day. And Sub-Zero sleeping bags are really expensive. So Dave figured out, and so did others, that we could buy these Mylar survival bags that go inside of like a 20-degree bag and use your own body heat to reflect back, and you end up with a zero-degree bag, maybe better, and they're only $18. So it's a really, we're trying to think that way. It's a really cost-effective way to help. I have 5 cords of firewood that I don't know how to get there, but it's made me rethink. It's really made me rethink how we go forward. Maybe we don't deliver the firewood. Maybe we get funding and buy firewood closer. And but anyway, we have that, and we're shooting for shelters also.
Dave Taylor, you were part of organizing this, and you have spent some time out there, not just at Standing Rock, but on other Native land with other nations.
Yes, you know, I was very blessed to have the opportunity to spend time at the Cheyenne River Reservation, which is where I have made the contacts that Tim was referring to. Mm-hmm. And as far as this trip goes, let me just be clear. It's been the efforts of Tim and of Starbear who have really taken this thing and run with it. I was up there a couple of months ago and had a wonderful experience, not only with the people that I already knew from the Cheyenne River Reservation, but with the other people that I met at the Sacred Stone Camp. I went there for a couple of different reasons. One, obviously, to support the protest and to take some supplies that were donated by people in the community. But also, I have been, and sort of how I got involved in all of this, for a little bit over a year, I've been working on a documentary about the Lakota, about their struggles since the end of the Indian Wars, through their boarding school year trauma.
You're talking about the 1800 Indian Wars.
Yes. And the boarding school years where their children were taken away from them and were, quote, re-educated, quote, assimilated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to comment in regard to the boarding school years. Those stretched well into the 1940s, 1950s. So when it's not a quaint and historical thing, the effect of that.
It went on for generations.
Right. That's why I said the 1800 Indian
Wars.
That's
when it started, yeah, at the end of that. In fact, it started with the 1851 treaty, the Fort Laramie Treaty, which established the boarding school program and all of that. But this project that I've been working on has allowed me the opportunity to go to the reservation, to be educated in ways that I never was through, you know, our public school education about a lot of what happened during those years.
Exactly.
And so while I was at the Standing Rock camp, I was able to gather some more material, do some more interviews, that sort of thing for my project, and particularly speak with the Youth Indigenous Council, which are now the seventh generation that was predicted by Black Elk that would be the generation that would mend the broken hoop and help the people begin to flourish and rise again. Mm-hmm. So that was part of the reason I was there. Obviously, I was there to learn as much as I could and support the protests and the people who were staying in the camp.
You know, I found it interesting in your article, which was in the Soper Sun a couple of weeks ago. Wait, we can give an exact date.
It was
October 27th issue.
Yes.
So people can find that online. I was interested in all of your article, but particularly in the beginning, where you mention how some people at the camp did not pay attention to you or turned away from you. How did you respond to that? What was going on there, and how did you respond to that?
Well, what happened was, when I got there, it was in the evening, my friends weren't around, and so I spent the night. The next morning, my friends were still out, they were on an action, on a mm-hmm. protest action. So I was just kind of, you know, walking around the camp, and here I am, you know, a non-native mm-hmm. with a camera, mm-hmm. and they are understandably very sensitive to being exploited. They're understandably very sensitive to people that have come into the camp with an agenda that is not supportive of them. And so I was an outsider.
Right.
And among the people that I didn't know, there was a bit of distrust and suspicion. And the only way that I could handle it was by being friendly, explaining myself, counting, you know, depending on my friends when they came back to introduce me around. And once they did, then that was great. We were all like, you know, there with the same spirit and with the same, mm-hmm. you know, the same motivations and all of that sort of thing. But what struck me as being a white person in America who has grown up a part of the majority, I'm a white male mm-hmm. in America. Mm-hmm. There's maybe been one or two times in my life that I can remember where I have felt what could be described as, I don't even want to say discrimination, but just suspicion, you know, being an outsider, and it's mm-hmm. uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it was uncomfortable when I experienced it. Mm-hmm. I was not a part of the community. It's very mm-hmm. humbling. And as I mentioned in the article, I came away thinking about that on my long drive back, what it would be like to have that be my experience every day of my life. And I think for those of us who've never experienced that, it's not only a humbling, but it's a very educational and a very important experience to have.
Right, and I think it's important when you talk about exploitation and personal agendas or agendi, whatever that word is, that people be aware of that when they're out at camp. And I really appreciate the fact that you wrote about your experience, Shauna Foster. I'd like to bring you into this conversation. You are the minister of our Two River Unitarian Universalist congregation here in Carbondale. You're also a veteran of the Global War on Terror, having served 6 years as a nuclear biological chemical specialist with the Army National Guard. You went out to camp and as part of a clergy group. Can you talk about what you did and what you experienced?
Sure. So the Episcopal Church is in Cannonball, and Reverend John Floberg is there, and he put out a call expecting maybe 100 clergy, and I think he had the same response that you had, Tim, where over 540 clergy registered wow. to come to be part of this delegation. And many Christian Protestants, Unitarian Universalism isn't Christian Protestant, but a lot of Christian Protestant religions have repudiated the doctrine of discovery in their own individual traditions.
Can you talk about briefly what the doctrine of discovery is for people who don't understand that yet, and what do you mean by repudiation?
So the doctrine of discovery was a papal bull, a declaration by the Pope after Christopher Columbus discovered supposedly the New World, about the nature of the humanity of the people that were in the quote-unquote New World. And it came back that these people were not Christian, that Christians were not trying to convert them, and that you could commit genocide and take their lands at will, because there was no point. They were, during a time of slavery when there was lots of people who were considered less than people. That's what Native Americans were considered. And this was a cornerstone of United States law well into, I think it was in the early 2000s when it was finally said, okay, doctrine of discovery is no longer applicable when we are dealing with indigenous peoples. I could have that date wrong, but it was well beyond the civil rights era even. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it was part of people's, of denominations wanting to repudiate, to say, we as Christians or we as people of faith do not believe in this doctrine of discovery.
Well, has the Catholic Church denounced that?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
So what this was, though, this was the first time that all of those traditions got together and repudiated it to the Native Americans who were assembled at the Ochetisakawin camp.
Okay, so you were all at camp.
Yes.
500 clergy at
yes.
camp.
Right. So how this happened is there's seven sacred fires throughout the Ochetisakawin camp, which is just off of the reservation land. It's across the Cannonball River, and it's on the federal easement. And the main sacred fire, there's always prayers, people singing native songs there, and people making announcements, and the fire's always burning. This camp smells amazing because they're always burning sage and cedar and tobacco. So it is, the whole grounds is ceremony. It's hallowed ground because if you look at the history of the area, there are many different battles that have taken place there. There's no one spot that you can say, there's my ancestors. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. It's like Gettysburg. So there's no one particular place that you could reroute this pipeline around. It's all ceremony. It's all hallowed ground. I wore my robes and stole the entire time I was there in honor of the ceremony.
So your robes and stole.
Yes. So that's the mark of my ministerial
okay.
office. And so people could clearly see that I was a member of the clergy and okay. appreciated that because that is how the elders are also dressed. They mm-hmm. are dressed ceremoniously because this is not a protest. This is to protect our waters. The people there call themselves the water protectors, mm-hmm. and this is a ceremony, a water ceremony they do every day to call for the protection of the water. So it's all ceremony.
How were you all received walking around?
John Floberg is the Episcopal minister there, so he has a good relationship with the Native Americans. And I'm not saying that people were so grateful, but people were looking for a way to heal this long division, and that is what the Native American elders have been saying. They want to do a healing between the nations, between the tribes, and between the imperialism of the United States and the exploitation of the land to heal the land instead. So the repudiation itself happened on Thursday, which was a week after the clearing of the Forward Camp, which was on the 1851 contested treaty territory.
The
land.
Forward Camp. Was mm-hmm. that the clearing was with the riot gear?
Yes.
The police were in riot gear.
That had happened just a week before okay. where we saw all those pictures and 141
people. The burning barricade.
The cards mm-hmm. And 140 people were arrested. And so a week after, 540 clergy come around the sacred fire, and there was eight or nine denominational leaders, and they all had a section of the Doctrine of Discovery that they read, and then they read their tradition's repudiation of it and why it was important and prophetic to repudiate that. And then they asked the Native American elders there if they would burn it, or they to take the Doctrine of Discovery, and the Christian and the non-Christians, but the Protestant kind of traditions, asked if the Native American elders would like to burn it, and they said yes. And so they took some coals from the sacred fire, and they burned the papers in front of everyone, and a great shout was let out, and people clapping and cheering, and then we sang the typical song, Amen, you know, Amen. Amen. So everybody was singing that as the Doctrine of Discovery was burned.
Wow, that's an incredibly powerful story.
Mm-hmm.
What did that feel like for you?
It was wonderful to be able to be there in that historic moment mm-hmm. and to try to begin the healing and reconciliation. And, mm-hmm. and I was grateful for the symbolism of it. And I hope that the symbolism is followed up with actions, that people support the water protectors, that people go to, if you are a person of faith and have a spiritual home, that you talk about Native American rights and what it means on a spiritual level,
mm-hmm.
to respect the treaties, to live up to our words. You know, what does it mean to be a white person of faith? How are you living up to your best spiritual values and our nation's relationship with the many indigenous nations and relations in this land?
Mm-hmm.
And these are really difficult questions that I feel that every house of faith should be discussing to really help mobilize people to make sure that we don't exploit our lands or hurt people anymore for profit.
Wow.
Wow.
Do you want to add a wow?
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
This is very powerful. I really appreciate you all being here. I'm talking to Dave Taylor, Shauna Foster, and Tim Brogdon about their experiences at the Sacred Stone Camp in North Dakota. And we're just about out of time, but I'm hearing that there are like 4,000 people.
5,000.
5,000 people.
From Dallas Goldtooth at the Indigenous Environmental Network, if you want the up-to-date latest information, go to Indigenous Media Rising or the Indigenous Environmental Network. And this past weekend, he posted that there were 5,000 people at the camp now.
So based on your experiences, and I know we're not speaking for any Native Americans or any Native Nations here, but based on your own experiences, what do you think is the best way to support the water protectors and support the resistance at Standard? Is it to go out to camp and join 5,000 other people or what? Dave, were you going to say something?
I think that's part of it, yes. I think that the more unity that can be shown at the camp, the more unity among Native and non-Native people, the better. I think the other thing that we can do is we can demand individually and collectively that our government pay attention to what's going on there. I think there is desperate need for mediation among the conflicts.
Mediation.
Well, I have called and written an email that encouraged the Justice Department to send people to oversee what is happening in the conflicts between the water protectors and the law enforcement people that are there. I think that's only going to benefit everybody. Mm-hmm. I think that there needs to be that, and I think that we should demand that the government get more involved in what is seemingly right now being run by state and local officials. That's just my opinion. I think supporting the people with, like what Tim and Starbear are doing, you know, taking up supplies for the winter. Winter's mm-hmm. tough, mm-hmm. tough up there.
And North Dakota is very windy
Dakota,
and freezing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A show of unity in any way that we can.
We just have a couple of minutes left. And Shauna, you've organized an event here locally for Saturday, November 12th. Can you tell us briefly what that is?
Yes, it'll be 5:30 in the Callaway Room in the 3rd Street Center. And it's for people who have gone to Standing Rock to talk with people who haven't but are interested in what is going on and how can they help. Okay. I feel like you really need to experience it. If you can go humbly and appreciating that this is ceremony and being able to help. If you can't go that way, then figure out how you can help locally. And that's what this event is for on Saturday at 5:30, is to be able to figure that out, because it's not an easy thing that you can just read a list or mail one letter. This is a systems change, a complete systems overhaul, and how we respect Indigenous people that are on these lands, and how do we care for the earth, and how do we meet our energy needs. So there isn't one easy thing you can do. It requires a conversation, so I hope that you will be able to come out.
That's Saturday at 5:30 at the 3rd Street Center in the Callaway Room. There's also another event coming up on November 18th. It's a concert performance from 5 to 8 p.m. at...
Also at the 3rd Street Center.
Oh, it says right there, 3rd Street Center. It's at the 3rd Street Center, mm-hmm. featuring the band Indigenous. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty cool event. KDNK and E-Town and Earth Guardians and a bunch of other groups and organizations are supporting this. And that is November 18th at the 3rd Street Center. You'll probably hear more about that. Well, we're out of time, unfortunately, but I'd like to thank Dave Taylor, owner of Cool Brook Studios, Shauna Foster, minister of the Two Rivers Unitarian Universalist Congregation, and Tim Brogdon of the Teepee Poles and Teepees. you live here in Carbondale, don't you?
I do. I live down at 7th and the Bike Path. Okay. It's been very busy there lately.
Well, I want to thank all of you very much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
You've been listening to Valley Voices. My guests were Dave Taylor, Tim Brogdon, and Shauna Foster, who is the minister for Carbondale's Two Rivers Unitarian Universalist Congregation. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. Thanks for listening.
To the east and west, to the north and south. Warrior, warrior, and gather every child. Mama, need you now. Warrior.
Banks are moving in just to get their dollar. Treat is being broken, no respect or honor. Listen close, my friend, this is happening. Warrior, warrior, if you are a rock, stand up like a mountain. Rise up from the earth, one love, one message. I know that we are strong in spirit, and if you are the righteous, agency, the spirit is the leader.